You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you and feeling much, much better today, I got to tell you. The wonders of lemon juice. It's Friday, the first hour of our program, Brunch with Bernie. Senator Bernie Sanders, the man I think of as America's senator. People in Vermont, of course, think of him as their senator. And having lived in Vermont for a decade, I well understand that sentiment. Is with us for our national town hall meeting, Brunch with Bernie. He will be taking your calls at 866-987-THOM in just a few moments. And, Bernie, welcome.
Good to be with you, Tom.
Great to have you. As we're speaking right now out in front of the Marriott Wardman Hotel, which is where the CPAC convention is going on, literally as we speak, candidate Walmart, and this is without the dash, so they're not violating their copyright, is announcing that it is the first corporation to officially run for president with revenues of $480 billion. Last year, they figured that they've got enough money to be in the race and run as a corporation for president of the United States. What do you think?
Well, I think they'll probably win.
Don't make me laugh.
But they'll have some competition. I'm afraid that Romney and Gingrich will also have substantial corporate backing as well. Yeah. I think I want to reiterate some of the concerns that I've raised in the past, and I think more and more Americans are seeing the outrageous and horrendous implications of the 5-4 Citizens United Supreme Court decision of 2 years ago. And what we're seeing right now, as bad as it is, we should appreciate, is really in many ways just the tip of the iceberg. What Citizens United is about is saying that a corporation is a person. That person has First Amendment freedom of speech rights to spend as much money as it wants in elections, on campaign, advertising, on television, radio, etc. What we are already seeing right now, and it will only get much, much worse, is that billionaires and corporations are already pouring huge sums of money into all of the campaigns for president. We saw Sheldon Adelson, a multi-billionaire from Nevada, pouring millions into Gingrich's campaign. You saw billionaires, John Paulson, etc., hedge fund operator, pouring substantial sums of money into the Romney campaign. Mr. Santorum also has some sugar daddies pouring significant monies into his campaign. We will be reaching the point where candidates essentially will be completely owned by corporate interest if we do not overturn Citizens United. And the good news is there, I think, all over this country, people understand the need to do just that. We have got 32 local governments around our nation that have already passed resolutions calling for a constitutional amendment. There are state legislatures now beginning to discuss the issue. I can tell you that in the state of Vermont, come what we call March meeting day, first Tuesday in March, we're going to have 32 local governments. We're going to have 36 towns, who will be debating the need for a constitutional amendment. My guess is most of those will pass. So we have 200,000 names on our website petition, and you're going to see legislation coming to the floor of the Senate, I suspect, in the not-too-distant future, attempting to deal with Citizens United, not a constitutional amendment, but legislation that can significantly diminish the horrendous impacts of Citizens United. So this is a huge impact. For anyone who's concerned about American democracy, the right of the people, ordinary people, to control their political future, we've got to be involved in that issue. There's another issue out there, Tom, that I've been working very hard on, and we've talked about it in the past, that is the future of the U.S. Postal Service. Postal Service has financial problems because of the decline of first-class mail. There are ways, in my view, to save the Postal Service, to save rural post offices, to save the kind of delivery system we have right now, to go forward without laying off in the midst of a recession, or reducing, I should say, hundreds of thousands of jobs, including many for veterans, in the Postal Service. And the fight we're making is to make sure that the Postal Service doesn't have to come up with $5.5 billion every single year in future retiree health benefits when their their account is already, their fund is already very, very strong. So we're working with many, many members of the Senate on this issue. The goal is protect a couple of 100,000 jobs, and move the Postal Service into a much more entrepreneurial, aggressive marketing effort in order to raise more revenue. Now here's some good news in the midst of some not so good news, and that is, my understanding is that the president, in his budget to be coming out on Monday, is not going to be calling for cuts in Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid. And, you know, this is, as the chairman of the Defending Social Security Caucus, this is an issue we have been involved in, for many, many years. And every day there's another fight on another front from those people who want to, cut COLAs for seniors, those people who want to privatize Social Security, those people want to raise the eligibility age for Medicare, those people want to make slashing cuts in Medicaid. Right now, Social Security has a $2.5 trillion surplus, can pay out all benefits for the next 25 years, hasn't contributed one nickel, to the deficit. We got to fight to protect Social Security, and I think, at least in terms of the president's support now, we have, won a victory, in that area. There will be, starting on Monday, in the Senate, a transportation bill coming forward. And it's interesting, I'm on the Transportation Committee. The chairperson of the committee is Barbara Boxer, who is the chairman of the Environmental and Public Works Committee, and this comes under Public Works. The ranking member, the Republican leader, is Jim Inhofe, who is a very, very, very conservative guy, has horrendous positions on global warming. But actually, on this issue, coming from Oklahoma, which, as I understand it, has serious infrastructure problems, he and Barbara Boxer have been working together. We have all worked hard on this. There's not enough money going into the program, but clearly, if we want to improve our crumbling infrastructure, roads, bridges, etc., we need to pass a strong transportation bill, which will also create a substantial number of jobs. So people should be aware that a major transportation bill will be debated in the Senate, and I hope we can get it passed. So the last point that I wanted to make is chairman of the subcommittee on primary health care and aging. We're going to be doing a hearing on the dental care crisis in this country. Affordable dental care is not an issue that is talked about enough. In Vermont, we are making some progress because we have established a number of community health centers which provide dental care, but we have a long way to go. Many, many parts of this country, many parts, if you are a low-income, moderate-income person and you are having problem with your teeth, you are finding it very, very hard to locate a dentist who will treat you at an affordable cost. So when we talk about health care reform, we can't forget about dental care, can't forget about the fact that probably the single most significant reason why kids are absent from school, miss school, is because of dental care. The fact that many people develop health problems because of infections relating to their teeth. So this is an issue we want to be banging away at, understand the depth of the problem, which is pretty serious, what some of the solutions are. At the very least, we need more dentists. We need more dental therapists. We need to make sure that our schools have dental chairs. We get the kids before they suffer very serious problems. Earlier this week, some of us, we'll pick up when we return.
Okay, great. We're talking with Senator Bernie Sanders. It's our Brunch with Bernie Hour. We'll be taking your calls in just a few minutes. 866-987-THOM, our telephone number. And by the way, check out, we started out talking about Citizens United. Senator Sanders is sponsoring a constitutional amendment to roll back Citizens United. You can sign up for it over at sanders.senate.gov.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And let your own senator know that they, if you don't live in Vermont, that they should be supporting it as well. We'll be back with more of your calls for Bernie right after this. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. We'll figure out these bumpers. Alex in Cape Floral, Florida. You're on the air with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Thank you, Tom. First-time listener. And Senator Sanders, you are a hero of mine. I'm reading your book, The Speech, right now. It's excellent.
Thank you very much, Alex.
And I want to say, I read the story today when I got home from school, and I thought about you when I saw it. It says, Obama frees 10 states from No Child Left Behind, and says 28 more expected to seek similar approval by the end of the month. Now, obviously, that program is unpopular, but I want to know, where do we as a country go from there to fix education in this country, which you and I both know is horrible? I think you're the best guy to give President Obama advice. What do we do, sir?
Well, thanks, Alex, and thanks for raising the issue of education. I think the situation is very, very dire, and it is in many ways getting worse, especially for low-income and working-class families. What we have seen in recent years are cutbacks in public education. Kids not getting the education they need to succeed in the 21st century. So here's what I think, Alex. The very first thing that we have to do as a nation is make a decision that every single child in this country, regardless of income, is going to get the highest quality education they need. And we have to understand, as much of the rest of the world already does, that education is an investment. If we do not have a well-educated workforce, how in God's name are we going to compete against countries all over the world that are doing a lot better in education than we are? It was not so many, many years ago that the United States led the world in terms of the percentage of our people who went to college. That number is way, way down. We're now in about ninth place. In terms of child care, we have an absolute disaster all over America, in Vermont, throughout this country. You have working families, husband and wife, both working, single mom working, want to know that their kids are getting the quality care that you need from 0 to 3, which are the most important years in a child's life. We don't have it. We don't have it. We're still back in the 1950s, and we think that mommy is home with the baby. Well, mommy is not home. She's out working, trying to make a living, trying to, you know, support the family. So from 0 to college, you look at college. We had a town meetings, Alex, a couple of months ago in Vermont at some of our colleges. Kids were standing up, young lady crying, just not knowing how she's going to pay off her enormous debt that she has built up, being the first person in her family going to college. So we need a radical rethinking of education, understanding that it is an investment. And that's what we've got to shoot for. And lastly, as a nation, you know, we've got to reach the conclusion that maybe high quality education is almost as important as the Super Bowl. Don't want to go that far. But we do really have to understand how important education is, how important educators are. We have to attract the best and the brightest. We want the best people going into education. Pay them what they deserve to be paid. So in a sense, what I'm saying, Alex, is we need a revolution in our attitude toward education.
Yeah, I think that education is infrastructure. It's our intellectual infrastructure.
Right. That's exactly correct.
John in Minneapolis, you're on the air with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Yeah, thank you for taking my call. I just wanted to make the comment, and I don't know if this is true or not, but I had heard that in the lead up to passing the Affordable Care Act, Obama's act, that insurance companies alone spent over $1 million a day to make sure that their interests were protected. And these are the same companies that, you know, just did horrible things in denial of people and literally led to the deaths of many Americans. And yet, you know, the American right just absolutely denies that money has any influence in politics, and it's such a sophist argument. Yeah, maybe it doesn't all the time, but obviously to most people in the real world, it does. And I just was wondering if that was true, if they indeed spent that much money.
John, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I would guess that that's a very conservative estimate. $1 million a day would be probably a lot less than what they really spent. And it's not just the insurance companies, it's the drug companies, it's the medical equipment suppliers. During the healthcare debate, there is no question that the entire healthcare industry spent a fortune trying to make that bill as favorable to them as was possible. And here's the sad reality when we look at healthcare. And the tie-in, I think the point that John is making is to see the connection between lobbying and campaign finance and campaign funding and the results that we see as Americans. We're the only country in the industrialized world that doesn't guarantee health care to all of its people, yet we spend almost twice as much per person on health care as any other country. we pay the highest prices in the world for prescription drugs. Now, these things don't happen by accident. They happen because of the enormous power of the pharmaceutical industry and their trade group called pharma, the enormous power of the private insurance companies whose function in life is to make as much money as they can out of healthcare, not provide high-quality, affordable healthcare. So there is a direct correlation between campaign finance, the huge amounts of money that Wall Street, drug companies, insurance companies, military-industrial complex spend on campaigns, and what we end up getting in terms of public policy.
Which brings us back to the need for your constitutional amendment.
Which brings us back not only to the need to overturn Citizens United, but move aggressively to public funding of elections. You know, people say, the right wing says, oh my goodness, this is welfare for politicians, welfare for candidates, that they will receive public funding. Well, you're seeing the opposite of right now. You're seeing candidates for president, and you'll see it all over the political level, from Senate, House, on down, who will be totally beholden to millionaires, billionaires, and corporations for their political life. And I think it is a lot better for taxpayers to pay a few bucks more, not a whole lot, in order to make sure that everybody has a shot to run for office without being dependent on big money.
Amen. It's our Brunch with Bernie, our Senator Bernie Sanders, our national town hall meeting. Senator Sanders taking your calls. More with Senator Bernie Sanders right after this. Check out his website, sanders.senate.gov. You can sign his petition for a constitutional amendment, and you can get his Bernie Buzz newsletter.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
Back with more of your calls for Bernie. It's Brunch with Bernie, nationwide. And one of our best friends in the United States Senate is United States Senator Bernie Sanders. It's our Brunch with Bernie Hour, our national town hall meeting here on the Tom Hartman Program. And you can check out his website at sanders.senate.gov. And, Bernie, you're here, right?
I'm right here.
Okay, Len in New York City, you're on the air with Bernie.
Good morning, Senator Sanders. I'm wondering, and I'm supporting the idea of creating a super PAC specifically committed to advertising about super PACs, about how bad they were and who instituted them to begin with.
I think Stephen Colbert and Nancy Pelosi beat you to it, Len. Pardon my interrupting.
Yeah, but I don't know if they're actually putting all that money in there. The idea's there.
Well, Len, I think that's a very good idea. I think that when the degree to which people learn about what a super PAC is doing, the degree to which they learn about who owns it and how perverse that whole process is for politics and democracy in America, the better it is. And I think that one of the antidotes to this huge flood of money coming into the political process right now, and which we will be seeing increasingly in the coming months up to November, is precisely to tell people about who is funding these things, or who we think is funding them things, because there's no disclosure. So advertising and fighting back on the media against the super PACs, I think, is an excellent idea, Len.
Andy in Kansas City, Missouri. You're on the air with Senator Bernie Sanders.
God bless you, Senator Sanders, and thank you, Tom. I've got a question, actually a couple of them, but the first question is, we've got a bunch of whistleblowers that are out there that are being persecuted by the government. And I'm not just talking about in the defense side of things, but I'm talking about throughout the federal government. And I know we had a whistleblowers law out there that was there to protect them. Why isn't that happening now?
Well, they should be protected. I can't give you the answer to that, Andy, without knowing the specifics. But I think there is widespread belief, regardless of one's political persuasion, that there is an enormous amount of waste and fraud in many parts of government. We did a study not so long ago documenting the enormous amount of fraud taking place within the defense industry and many, many contractors who are doing nothing else but ripping off the federal government. It's true with regard to Medicare, Medicaid, and almost every other branch of government. I think the whistleblower concept where employees, honest employees, who are prepared to stand up and expose the type of corruption is something that we should certainly be supporting.
Randy in Sioux City, Iowa. You're on the air with Bernie Sanders, Senator Bernie Sanders.
Good day, gentlemen. My first, it's a two-part question. The first one part is, Bernie, I had heard through an email that I got that the infrastructure bill that could possibly be coming from the United States Congress is going to be linked with oil production in Anwar. Is there any truth to that?
And well, Randy, the second part of you know, as you know, the way the Congress works is we have a bill in the House and a bill in the Senate. To the best of my knowledge, that is not the case in the Senate bill. I can't speak to what is in the House bill. My understanding is the House bill is not a particularly good bill.
Anthony in Detroit, Michigan, you're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Good morning, or good afternoon.
Hi, how are you?
Great, glad you're there, Mr. Sanders. I appreciate your work.
Thank you.
Support you 100%. I had a question. I'm calling from Detroit, don't I? I had a question about the settlement agreement that the Justice Department reached with the mortgage company and the banks regarding the robocalling. And from my understanding, what I've been reading, that that don't let them, that will not let them off the hooks for any criminal activities that could be pursued by the states. What do you think about that agreement?
Well, I'll tell you what I think. I mean, the good news is that I think it's somewhere around $25, $26 billion going to be released from large banks in order to help people save their homes who are now underwater. But, Anthony, what I think and I have thought about from day one, we are in the midst of this horrendous recession today where so many people have lost their jobs. You talk to people who have lost their life savings. We're talking about people who have lost their homes because of the dishonest and illegal behavior on Wall Street. And I think one of the reasons that people are so angry and so frustrated is they see these guys get away with murder. And, yes, reaching settlements with the government and coming up with billions of dollars, whether that's in fact enough, I can't tell you. But not seeing these people who have been engaged in, I believe, criminal activity go to jail is something that I think many people are deeply upset about.
Marvin in Pennsylvania, you're on the air with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Yes. Good afternoon, Senator. My name is Marvin. I was wondering, with the recent passage of the Congress passage giving the president a line item veto, in the payroll extension bill, the new one that they're having difficulty with, in there I noticed the Keystone X pipeline. Can the president just line veto that out?
Well, that's an interesting question. First of all, the line item veto has not been passed. I mean, what everybody has got to understand and not forget, we have two branches of Congress. We have the House and the Senate. The House is now controlled probably by the most right-wing leadership maybe in the history of this country or certainly in the modern history of this country. So nothing that comes from the House surprises me. Often they don't get what they want. Sometimes too often they do, but because of opposition from some of us in the Senate. So we do not have. And I strongly oppose giving the president the line item veto. When you do that, you're making our presidency almost an imperial presidency. You're giving the president enormous power, not only to undo things that Congress does, but to threaten Congress. And he can say, well, listen, unless you give me this, I'm going to veto, or line item veto that. You're making the president much, much more powerful than I think in our democratic form of society we should. In terms of the Keystone XL pipeline, clearly the House in every which way has been trying to get that thing included in legislation, get it passed, and I am strongly opposed to it. I've been one of those leading the opposition to it, because if we are serious about global warming, if we're serious about cutting greenhouse gas emissions, The last thing you want to be doing is digging for oil, which is almost twice as dirty as regular oil in terms of greenhouse gas emissions. So I think we should kill that project. I think we should move radically to energy efficiency, get cars that get 50, 60, 70 miles per gallon, public transportation much stronger, weatherizing our homes, moving to wind, solar, geothermal, biomass, other sustainable forms of energy. So I am not a great fan of the Keystone Pipeline.
You know, it blows my mind, Senator Sanders, China now has over 5,000 miles of light rail, I believe, or a high-speed rail, rather.
Right.
And here we are arguing about transporting oil from coast to coast across our country, and there's no discussion about transporting people at a high speed.
Well, we are way behind. I mean, just, in terms of infrastructure, Tom, China is spending about 9% of its GDP, Europe about 5%. We're spending 2%.
Yeah.
Everybody in America knows.
It's a travesty.
That it's a travesty. And as I mentioned earlier, we're hoping to pass a transportation bill, which goes nowhere near far enough, but at least we'll start creating some jobs as we rebuild our crumbling infrastructure.
And apropos of that, Wendy in Marin County, California has a question for you. You're on the air, Wendy. Wendy?
Yes, I'm here.
You're on the air with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Thank you very much. And this is about the transportation bill. And the previous caller is correct. The House bill is awful. It does include drilling not only in Anwar but off the California coast, and it eliminates funding for public transit. And the main thing I'm calling about is that there's a major assault on funding for walking and biking in the, both the House and in the Senate
right.
bill. And I wanted to know if the Senator, number one, are you going to vote for the Cardin-Cochran Amendment, which will at least strengthen the ability to get funding for walk-bike facilities, and just discuss this major assault to eliminate what is a tiny fraction
right.
of the bill, but which creates more jobs and makes the streets safe.
Okay. Wendy, I'm going to let Bernie answer
well,
that because we just have a minute left.
Interestingly enough, Wendy, in about 2 hours, I'm going to be sitting down with my staff going over the amendments and some of the amendments that we will be proposing. But I certainly can tell you that in my view, bike paths and walking paths are extremely important, and I think the transportation bill should include them. She is right, Wendy is right in saying that in the Senate bill, the House bill is a disaster. The Senate bill, as I recall, does not include that, and that's something we certainly would like to get back.
I can tell you, you know, when we lived in Portland, Oregon, well, and in Vermont, too, I mean, there's trails all over, but in Portland, the city had, I think, 44 miles of bike and walking trails. It was contiguous.
People like the paths. They help keep us healthy. They keep people out of cars. They cut down on pollution and greenhouse gas emissions. So, yeah, I think it's a winner, and I think we should be very supportive of those efforts.
Yeah, an absolute plus-plus. Senator Bernie Sanders with us. It's our Brunch with Bernie Hour. Check out his website at sanders.senate.gov, where you can sign his constitutional amendment to repeal Citizens United. sanders.senate.gov.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Brunch with Bernie, more of your calls for Senator Sanders right after this. Stick around.
And the men who hold high places must be the ones who start to mold a new
Welcome back to the place where despair is not an option, the Tom Hartman Program. Get out there and get active. Get over to sanders.senate.gov and sign that petition. CC in Colorado, you're on the air, Senator Bernie Sanders.
Good morning, gentlemen. Senator Sanders, since there's a group of people in our government that signed a loyalty oath to a lobbyist, why can't you introduce a bill of conscience and ethics to the American people to have them have fiscal responsibility as well as other responsibilities to the American people, not to the 1%. And I'll hang up now. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Cece. Well, actually, we do that. We swear an oath of allegiance when you take office in the House and the Senate to protect and defend the Constitution of the United States of America, which is, I think, what you're talking about. The idea that we have lobbyists out there whose main goal in life is to protect the 1%, to make sure that we continue to maintain the lowest effective tax rate for the very richest people in this country, threatening people that if they vote for any tax increase if they vote to do away with any loophole that corporations now enjoy. Right now you have major corporation after major corporation making billions of dollars in profit, some cases paying nothing in taxes, or very, very little in taxes. And that you have these right-wing lobbyists who threaten members of Congress who have signed oaths of allegiance to them, that they will not raise taxes. They would much prefer to cut Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid. But this is a political struggle. It's a political struggle, and our job is to expose those people who would rather side with a 1% and millionaires and billionaires than with working families. And I think in some ways we are beginning to make some progress in that area.
Robert in Northeast Maryland, you're on the air with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Yeah, hi, Bernie. I think I have a way of fixing this voter ID bill. I think we need to pull the bill and on the back of them, put the return the paper ballots, put them back in, and have every Democrat vote yay on them, and then watch the Republicans run from them. And I have another question. I would like to know this. How much does Fox and News and Rupert Murdoch, how much media does he have a hand in and own in the United States?
Good.
And the only reason they're getting away with what they're getting away with is because they know 90% of the Americans don't know what in the hell they're doing.
Well, Robert raises a very interesting point. I don't know that I have a full answer for him, but I think it's fair to say that Rupert Murdoch is one of the most powerful people in the world. He owns television networks, stations. He owns satellite TV in the United States significantly. He owns newspapers. But understand, Robert, it's not just in the United States of America. He's obviously originally born in Australia, has a lot of presence in the United Kingdom. When elections take place in the United Kingdom, the candidates come and talk to him. And he makes a decision as to who he's going to be supporting there, which carries a whole lot of weight with his newspapers there. So this guy is enormously powerful. And again, Robert raises an issue that Tom and I talk about a whole lot. And that is above and beyond Citizens United and corporate money coming into elections is the degree to which media conglomerates, including Fox and Rupert Murdoch, have enormous, enormous power over what people see, hear, and read. And that obviously influences how people learn about the world and what their political views are. It is a serious problem. And that's why it is so important to my mind that we continue to support efforts like Tom Hartman, and other progressive radio people, people on television. We're a minority. We're getting outgunned about 10 to 1 on radio. But it's terribly important that we grow that number and support those excellent radio talk show people like Tom, who do, in my view, an extraordinary job in presenting to the American people a very alternative perspective from what they see on Fox or other networks.
Thank you, sir. Randy in Seattle, you're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Hello, gentlemen. Senator, can you look into the fact that multiple Army service members at Madigan Hospital are having their diagnosis of PTSD changed to adjustment disorder, which results in likely denial of veterans benefits?
Randy, where is that located?
Madigan is in Seattle, or, you know, Puget Sound country.
Okay, and let me suggest this to you. You have two good senators there, Patty Murray and Maria Cantwell. And I would suggest starting off with them. This is a problem, though, I should tell you, Randy, that we're seeing around the country. A lot of men and women are coming home from Iraq and Afghanistan with PTSD, and some of us are serious about making sure they get the quality treatment that they need. Unfortunately, there may be instances where, in a particular hospital, there is a denial of that reality. So, Randy, my first suggestion would be to contact your senators in Washington.
Okay. Eric in Interlochen, Michigan. Hey, Eric, you're on the air with, the air with Senator Sanders.
Hello, Senator Bernie Sanders. I'm a real big fan, and I think you're one of the only senators that actually represents their constituents. I just had a question on how come we don't have a comprehensive energy policy. I've heard that they've shut down gas refining on the East Coast, which is going to lead to the rise in gasoline prices this summer. approaching $5 a barrel or a gallon while a barrel of oil is dropping. This is inconsistent. This doesn't even make any market sense. I'll hang up and I'll look forward to your answer. And hang in there. You're fighting for us.
Eric, thanks very much. I mean, a discussion about energy could go on for a very long time. To answer the first part of your question, why don't we have a comprehensive energy policy? I think the answer is pretty simple. The power of the oil companies, ExxonMobil and the rest, who have made something like $1 trillion in profit in the last 10 years, is enormous. Power of the coal companies is enormous. And these guys have incredible influence, certainly on the Republican Party and on some Democrats as well. The need to transform our energy system for economic reasons as well as environmental reasons away from foreign oil, away from fossil fuels is, I think, apparent to almost everybody. But these guys are very powerful, and they're opposing us every step of the way.
Thanks, Bernie.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Thanks so much, Bernie Sanders.
Thank you.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And although it is Anything Goes Friday, CPAC is going on. Typically, I'm over there. If I hadn't had the flu or something, whatever it was I had this week, I would be there right now. But it's better that I'm probably not coughing on people there, although I'm not sure I should be coughing on people here. In any case, Charles Drevena is with us. He is the president of the American Fuel and Petrochemical Manufacturers, previously the National Petrochemical and Refiners Association, the website afpm.org. Charles, welcome to the program.
Tom, thanks for having me. Sorry thanks. You're not here.
Thanks for joining us. Many people would suggest that your industry is one of the largest welfare recipients in the United States and that you're fighting vigorously to maintain your welfare payments. How do you respond to that?
Absolute fallacy. If you're talking about subsidies, which is the misnomer of the year or of the decade, we as an industry, whether it's refining or petrochemical or oil and gas, we don't get subsidies, Tom. We share in the same tax provisions that every other American manufacturer shares. Subsidies are what was given to the ethanol industry, what's given to the biodiesel industry, what was given to Solyndra. We don't get those.
There's no petroleum depletion allowance any longer?
Well, that is a tax provision that could be equated to a tax provision for other manufacturers who have equipment depletion. So it's apples to apples when it comes to tax provisions, but it's not even fruit. It's not even apples to oranges when you're talking about subsidies for the oil and gas industry.
If I chop down a tree and it falls on my neighbor's house, I have to pay something, or at least my insurance company, one or the other, has to pay for my neighbor's house. How come hundreds of thousands of Americans get asthma every year from your guys' products being used, being burned, petrochemical products being burned and used, and tens of thousands get cancer, and you don't pay a penny toward that? We all pay it out of our taxes.
Well, first of all, Tom, there's no causal link between asthma and petrochemicals. That has never been proven. Let me tell you what petrochemicals do.
You're sounding like the tobacco lobby. You're
sounding like someone who doesn't know the facts, Tom, and that's what I'm hearing here. The facts about petrochemicals are we've saved more lives in this country from the products that we provide daily.
But does that mean you shouldn't pay for externalities?
Well, we do pay for externalities. We provide, you walk into a hospital and walk into an operating room and you look around. Everything you see there is a petrochemical. Take your medicine. Take care of chemotherapy. Take any drugs, any pharmaceuticals. That's petrochemicals. Take the Kevlar that protects our men and women overseas. That's petrochemicals.
So are you saying that if I spend 3 days a week working at the homeless shelter and feeding the homeless, that when I chop that tree down and it crashes in my neighbor's house, I shouldn't have to pay his house because I do good things?
Tom, your facts are so skewed that it boggles my mind.
Let's well, I think anybody can Google the fact that the children who live near highways have higher rates of asthma. Is that because of car paint whizzing by? I mean, I think it's because they're breathing auto exhaust.
Since the 1970s, auto emissions have been reduced to the point where back in, if you had your car sitting on your driveway in the 60s and early 70s, you would have more emissions coming from that car on a summer day sitting in your driveway than you do today driving an automobile from New York to California and back.
And a fine
and that's
thing
a
it
fact.
Is. And you guys fought those regulations every step of the way.
But we implemented them and we're doing it. We've cleaned up the autos. We've cleaned up the fuel. We're continuing to clean it up. The problem is, I'm curious.
I don't want to be constantly interrupting you.
Well,
finish your thought, please.
The problem is not that we're not striving for a cleaner, better product. We do that every day. The problem is this administration and those and their supporters in Congress are trying to magically transform the energy structure of this nation, overnight flip the switch, drive up the cost of fossil fuels so high that they become competitive, that these so-called alternatives become competitive. That's not the way to make something competitive.
The way to make it
competitive is a free market and consumer choice, Tom. Consumer choice should drive exactly what the policies are in this country.
That sounds nice.
It's not in the abstract.
No, I think it's nonsense. We did our show for a week from Denmark 2 years ago. Denmark said, you know, it's costing us about $1 per gasoline burned in the cancers and asthmas in this country, so we're going to raise the tax by $1. Plus, we want to encourage alternative energies because we're going to raise the tax by another $2. They have the highest gasoline tax rate in the world. It costs $10 a gallon for gasoline in Denmark. The result of that is a half of Danes don't even drive anymore. They walk or take public transportation. The people who do drive are driving smaller cars. Mm-hmm. It's a country that doesn't have any oil reserves. They've dramatically reduced their imports, and they're getting 30% of their electricity from wind power. That seems like a rational thing. That seems like national self-interest. The free market only helps the people, the fat cats who own the free market.
Well, first of all, Tom, you compare the geography of Denmark to the geography of the United States. You compare what consumers want in the United States. You compare wind. It may be very applicable there. It doesn't.
Texas is getting 20% of their power, electricity right now from wind power.
Yes, and on certain
times.
And
it's not the free market. It was subsidies put into place by Republican governors.
Well, the wind power in Texas. The one thing about it you have to consider, that is not peak power. That is not power that's going to be there every day, 24/7.
Right, so there needs to be storage systems.
yes, there does. When you come
so
up,
so let's
Tom,
move to a hydrogen economy.
A hydrogen economy. And you
I'm,
know,
I'm curious if your industry is planning for this. I
mean, we are researching all of these things. But Tom, you've got when the price of a gallon of gasoline hit $4 a gallon, through absolutely no fault of the oil, natural gas, or refining industries, there was public outcry. The Secretary of Energy, Stephen Chu, a Nobel laureate, a brilliant man, said in order for these things to work, these things being alternate energies, we have got to have the price of gasoline and diesel equal to what's going on in Europe. Now, you want to tell your listeners that they should be paying $8 or $9 a gallon at the pump?
If we did the same thing that Europe did and that China's doing right now, too, and that is built. They've laid 5,000 miles of high-speed rail. We have none.
Well,
China's
also
high-speed transportation of oil from Canada to the Gulf so we can export it. Our number one export right now is gasoline. If our number one export is gasoline, manufactured export, why is the price of gas so high in the United States?
Well, apparently, Tom, you don't understand world economics, and that statement just proves it.
Well, what I understand is that if your industry chooses to export things rather than sell them in the domestic market, you're going to keep your price high.
Is the price of bulldozers and off-road equipment that Caterpillar ships overseas, if they kept that here in the United States, would the price of bulldozers drop?
If there was a surplus of them, sure.
Well,
people would stop keeping old ones and start buying new ones.
Again, that shows the fallacy of your uneconomic theories, Tom, because exports are good. We have plenty of fuel here in the United States for the demand. We are keeping jobs.
That's why the price is so low.
No, the price is set on a world market.
If the price is set on the world market, then why did different countries pay different prices for gasoline?
Taxes. on taxes. That's all. The difference.
You got Middle Eastern countries where gasoline is 40 cents a gallon.
Wow.
You got European countries where it's $10 a gallon. You got us where it's $4 a gallon.
You're comparing the Middle Eastern countries, which are heavily subsidized. And, you know, I mean, you talk about Middle Eastern countries. Iran has more oil than most countries.
They don't have refining capacity.
They don't have refining capacity, yeah. You know. So we do. We have, Tom, we have it all here.
But you guys control it all. You guys control the refining capacity.
What do you mean? There are 147 refineries in this country, operated by 50 or 52 different companies. No one controls anything.
I'm curious. Well, listen, we're out of time.
Well,
I'll leave you with the last word. Okay.
Well, the last word is: we're not an energy poor country. We're an energy rich country.
You're absolutely right. AFPM.org is the website. Charles Brevina. Thank you, Charles.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
We'll be back with your calls on Anything Goes Friday here, right after this. Tom Hartman with you, 15 minutes past the hour.
In olden days, a glimpse of stocking was looked on as something shocking. Now heaven knows, anything goes.
20 minutes past the hour, Tom Hartman here with you. Dave in Kansas City, Kansas. Hey, Dave, what's on your mind?
Hello, Tom.
Hello?
I wanted to notify the residents of Kansas that we got a couple of bills going on here that they need to look at.
And those are?
We got Brownback for governor, first off.
I know.
Koch brother.
Yep.
Anyhow, they got a bill, SB 113, where they're wanting to sell KU Hospital.
Okay.
The Kansas Hospital, and they have a House bill, HB 2330, which is a form of medical cannabis.
Mm-hmm.
They're trying to get that through.
Oh, that's interesting. Everybody, so on the one hand, they're trying to privatize a hospital. On the other hand, they're trying to legalize pot for medicine?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's good stuff for people in Kansas to be aware of, Dave. Thank you very much for the tip and the heads up. I appreciate it. Great to hear from you. Donna in Lansing, Michigan, my hometown where I grew up. Hey, Donna, what's up?
Oh, it's Diane.
Or Diane, I'm sorry.
I need to get
my glasses strengthened here.
Well, me too, actually.
Okay, so what's up?
I'm glad to hear you're feeling better.
I am, thank you.
I was just calling to ask you, do you know of any of the other states they were running the Republican primaries if Barack Obama was on the bill primary too?
The primaries are run by the political parties, not by the states.
Mm-hmm.
And the political parties, you know, fund them and run them and all that kind of stuff. And so I'd be astounded. I mean, I might be wrong, but I'd be astounded if the Democratic Party was running primaries in anything more than a perfunctory fashion in any states. And
well, that's why I'm calling, because I wanted to give a heads up to all the Michigan people out there to go and vote on Tuesday, February 28th, because Barack Obama we can vote.
Oh, okay. So there is a Democratic primary. So maybe the state's got his hand in the primary somehow.
No, they don't.
They don't.
It's Ruth Johnson, our Secretary of State, who has put Barack Obama's name on there.
On the Democratic ballot.
They're spending $10 million, yes. They're spending $10 million of our money to put his name on there. So I just want to make sure everybody knows to go vote.
is that because they're also letting a whole bunch of wackadoodle candidates on, and they're hoping that, you know, some of them, you know, outpoll Obama and he gets humiliated in Michigan? Is that the deal?
No, actually, I checked our ballot. We have a sample ballot.
Yeah.
And I went online, and it's all of the Republicans, and then the other one is the Democratic ballot, and he's the only one on there.
Oh, that's very interesting. You know, Michigan is an open... what do you call it? Open primary state.
Open primary,
So
my goal is to get all the Democrats I can out there, and then I want to see the headline, GOP primary won by Barack Obama.
Well, that's going to happen, Diane. I think that's a pretty sick. But here's the question. I shouldn't admit how old I am, but I remember when George Wallace was running for president on the Democratic ticket in Michigan, and because Michigan's an open primary state, they the Republican Party officially, I mean, they came right out and said it, Republicans should vote in the Democratic primary, not the Republican primary, and they should vote for George Wallace. And they did, and it was a horrible black eye for the state of Michigan, a terrible embarrassment that we were the only state in the union that sent actual delegates to the Democratic convention for George Wallace and gave him some credibility. And it was only because of the Republicans in the state. So do you think that maybe the Democrats should say turnabout is fair play and all the Democrats in Michigan should vote in the Republican primary for, say, you know, Rick Santorum or some absolute wackadoodle? I don't know who's on the ballot.
Yes, some of my coworkers were mentioning that, too, because I was talking to them, too, about it. So
yeah,
I can just do that.
Yeah, or whomever. Yep, there you go. Diana, thanks for the heads up, though. February, the primary is coming up. Thanks a lot for the call. Good to hear from you. Let's see here. David in Seattle. David, you're on the air. What's up?
Hey, Tom, I just wanted to respond to your previous caller's posture. I really, really hate disingenuous intellectuals. Mm. And he left
Oh, you're talking about the guy from the oil industry?
Oh, my, geez. He left out derivatives altogether as if that's a solid policy. And
yeah.
If we tax that, we could address all the externalities.
Yeah. Well, I think, frankly, externalities should be identified and taxed. It's really simple. You know, it's so bizarre that in this country we've been using oil since the 1860s and in a really big way since the 1920s. And we've never had a national conversation. And the same thing with coal. We've never had a national conversation about the externalities associated with it, the costs associated.
The derivatives, the magnitude of the derivatives trades allows actually a vehicle for us to receive funds with, if we're going to enhance the market with the additional $20 per barrel,
yeah.
At least we should address the externalities with the magnitude of $600 trillion worth of trade that we could do something.
Yeah, I mean, cap and trade is actually a way of grabbing externalities. And here's the thing that people miss. Is that we actually have cap and trade right now in sulfur dioxide emissions, the stuff that causes smog, and it has radically reduced smog, and the guy who put that in place was George Herbert Walker Bush.
Thank you.
And so you're absolutely right, David, and excellent
it's really
point.
It's truly conservative, and it's actually enhancing the economic policy while stabilizing the market.
Yeah, and it has. Thank you, David, for the call. Frank in Cambridge, Mass. Frank, we got a minute to the break. I'm sorry. What's up?
Oh, hello. Thanks for taking my call. I just heard a news item on a local cable TV show the other day on February 8th, and they said that people have followed the advice of a few years or so ago and make savings more, so they put 8% more. Workers put 8% more into their 401k accounts. However, the asset balances did not rise at all. They went up $0, and they attribute this fact to the what happened is the excess fees and charges that these mutual fund companies are putting on.
Oh, yeah.
So what happens is people, they're following their advice. They're doing away with pensions, and they say, you're on your own. People are putting money in.
And then you put it in a 401k, and you get robbed. And I'm with you, Frank. It's why I don't have a 401k or an IRA or anything else. Frank, thanks a lot for the call. Not that I'm offering investment advice.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
It just seems to me that whenever the government comes along and says, you know, especially during the Reagan administration, says, we're going to create a category for you to put money into, and only the banks can hold it. Welcome back to Anything Goes Friday here on the Tom Hartman Program, where we dare to ask, is Walmart a person? And we dare to say, no, I don't think so. Although Walmart, without the hyphen, did announce today in front of the CPAC convention that it is running for president of the United States. They claim they're the first corporation to run for president. I actually debated some 4 or 5 years ago in Portland. You can find the YouTube out there, a corporation that was running for president. There have been a few, but I congratulate them all. It's just a marvelous thing. Catholics United just introduced released a press release. Catholics United is, it's a Catholic group here in the United States. And Catholics group supports Obama administration's new compromise regulation on HHS contraception rule. We talked about this at some length yesterday. I continue to think that the best way that this is... First of all, I see a lot of manufactured outrage in this, and I think it's because there was good economic news came out, and the Republicans and the right-wingers wanted to seize the news cycle, which they did very effectively. Secondly, this is an issue that wouldn't even be an issue if we had a national health care system, as I went off on at considerable length yesterday, and I won't repeat. But what the Obama administration has said now is that, in fact, here I'm quoting from the Catholics United press release, the new regulation will ensure that Catholic hospitals, universities, and social service providers that are religiously opposed to contraception and sterilization do not have to provide or even refer for those services, while also requiring insurance companies to provide contraceptive services free of charge to any enrollee who wishes to have the coverage. The objecting religious organizations would have no role in providing coverage or referring employees for services they would deem objectionable. The cost of the contraceptive coverage would be borne by the insurance companies and will be offset by the long-term cost savings associated with the reduced need for maternity care. This is the brilliant twist that Catholics United put on this. Twist, I mean, in the positive sense, the understanding of the issue. Using the standard of Catholic moral theology, this solution is acceptable because no Catholic or Catholic institution will be directly involved in what the Church deems to be an immoral act. James Salt, the executive director of Catholics United, said Catholics United has been calling on both sides of this heated debate to work toward today's win-win solution. President Obama has shown us that he is willing to rise above the partisan fray to deliver an actual policy solution that both meets the health care needs of all employees and respects the religious liberty of Catholic institutions. So hopefully this thing is put to bed, although I guarantee you that the partisans among us will not leave it at that. But step by step, we'll see. Anyhow, it's Anything Goes Friday. Our lines are slammed, so let's pick up some calls here. Bob in Palaquah, Oklahoma. Hey, Bob, what's up?
Oh, thank you, Tom, and I do hope you get to feeling better real soon.
Oh, I'm feeling a whole lot better today, Bob. I may not sound all that great, but yesterday I was feeling pretty good. Today I'm feeling pretty whole.
Yeah,
thank you for asking.
About 7 days, 7 day cycles. Lemon juice, that's great that you mentioned it. Anyway, I'm calling to say something about the nuclear power issue.
Yeah.
I want to ask.
That's another industry
questions.
Of welfare queens. You know, it's the oil industry and the nuclear industry.
Here in Oklahoma, they tried to build a nuclear plant called Black Fox and put it on a little river here in eastern Oklahoma, and we shut it down. I was pretty young then, been a long time. That was back in the late 70s. But we've done a lot of work associated with doing research on the nuclear industry and trying to keep our eye on it. And I wonder where the resistance is. Let's interview some people from the Atlanta area that don't want this plant there. And I want to tell your viewers, they started construction on that plant, Black Fox, here near Inola, Oklahoma. They started construction on it. They wasted a lot of the taxpayers' money trying to start building that place. There's no way it's economical. There's no way it's safe.
Yep.
And where is the resistance from the people around Atlanta, Georgia? And that's basically what I just want to put that out there.
That's okay.
Tom.
Well, first of all, I guarantee you that nuclear reactor will not be built within the range of the city of Atlanta, because they wouldn't be able to deal with the blowback. They're probably going to put it on the Savannah River or the Chattahoochee, and out in the remote parts and in poor rural areas, something like that. But you're absolutely right. Nuclear power, and thank you, Bob, for the call. Nuclear power is the most expensive form of electrical power generation in the world, and would not exist in the United States without government subsidies. If you took away the Price-Anderson Act, you should just simply ask the question, why is it that you've never heard of a nuclear power plant being offered as an initial public offering on Wall Street? Why is it that you can't buy shares in nuclear power plants? Because nobody would invest in them. Well, actually, you can buy shares in companies that have nuclear power right now, but that's because of the Price-Anderson Act, because they're backstopped by the government. But if they had to exist in the private marketplace, they simply would not exist. Van in Crown Point, Indiana. Hey, Van, what's on your mind today?
Hi, Tom. It's great to talk to you. And again, I have to thank you for what you do, and thank God for the service that you perform.
Thank you.
I had one simple question, and hopefully since that would be a short answer, I could ask another question. A little over a year ago when the Republicans were standing on the hose of future funding of the government, and when the credit status of the United States was downgraded from 3 to 2-star or whatever, I remember hearing something about the House Majority Leader shorting T-bills. Is there anything to that? Eric Cantor shorting T-bills while they're in that crisis?
Yeah, I remember that too. I'm sorry I don't have the details at my fingertips, but I recall reporting on it. There's so much stuff that flies through here. I'm sorry I don't have the details on that right now.
Okay. And just one other short question. The the Republicans are complaining about big government.
Actually, I do remember. Pardon me. Eric Cantor was invested. You know, they had to reveal their investments, and he was invested in a fund that was shorting T-bills. I'm quite sure of it. But anyhow, back to your question.
So it's good to know that. He's one of the people that is standing up now in defense or, you know, in support of the stock.
Well, don't consider it a certainty because I'm running on memory, and that's always a dangerous thing to do. So anyhow,
right.
What's up next?
During the Great Debate, when the 13 colonies were with their assemblies and House of Burgesses and so forth, were quibbling about Madison, Hamilton, and Adams' construction of the Constitution being too much of an overreach over the individual states. And I mean, it just sounds to me, what do these Republicans want? Do they want something? At the time, those people in opposition to the new Constitution that Hamilton and Adams and Madison wrote, the opposition was that it was too much of an overreach. The federal government had too much power. It was too far removed from the states. They wanted it that way. They wanted it. They wanted it to the point where individual citizens wouldn't be able to interact with their representatives. So, what do Republicans want? Do they want something like the EU, where, you know, we have sovereign states? And
no, they want something like the Articles of Confederation that we were operating under before the Constitution, which made
That's
each state a sovereign nation. And it didn't work then. It wouldn't work now. But really what the Republicans want is they want a state, a nation, that is sufficiently small and weakened that into that vacuum, because it does produce a vacuum, there is a national need for commons, for the commons. And when you take government out of that, something has to fill it. And they want their corporate buddies to fill it. They want Wall Street to fill it. They want the big transnational oil companies to fill it. They want the people who basically pay their meal tickets. And that's what the Republicans want. They want a corporate-run state, and they're doing absolutely everything they can to get it. Van, thanks a lot for the call. Well thought-out question there. Howard in Los Angeles. Hey, Howard, what's up?
Hey, Tom, how are you? Hope
Just
you're
great.
Feeling better.
I am, and thanks for listening to K-Talk. What's up?
Listen, so you had talked about Obama's response to this whole fabricated prescription problem, and I was really thinking about this for several days, and it occurred to me today that many drugs that are out there on the market are the result, and the discovery of these drugs are the result of evolution theory. And so if they're against the contraception pill based on theology, then they should also be against all of the other drugs that are based on evolution.
It's a little bit of a gratuitous stretch, Howard. You know, excuse me, there I go laughing again. I start coughing. I think the reality is that I think you're very, very close to right here. And this is what you're trying to point out, is that the vast majority of genuinely new pharmaceuticals in the United States, not new by virtue of patent. And this is something Bernie was talking about. You know, they'll take a pill and they'll just tweak it a little bit to keep the patent new every few years. But the genuine breakthroughs, most of them are funded in our public universities with federal dollars through the National Institutes of Health. and the well over 50% of the cost of developing all drugs, all new drugs in the United States, is paid for with taxpayer dollars. And we're not recapturing that. We're getting screwed by the drug companies. Howard, thanks for the call.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Anything Goes Friday. We'll be back with more of your calls, and every now and then we'll see if we can snag somebody at CPAC to have the argument. Is this the argument room?
Working class hero is something to be in. Working class hero is something to be in.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. 9.5 minutes before the hour. And Victoria Jones of the Talk Radio News Service, TalkRadioNews.com, on the line with us. Hey, Victoria, what's going on in the world?
Good afternoon. Well, I'm at CPAC.
Oh, my. Therefore, all the noise.
Crazy.
Yep.
Yes. And there's a gentleman dressed up as a revolutionary soldier with a bedroll.
Uh-huh.
And I just came just a few minutes ago from the Mitt Romney speech. And he, of course, followed the Rick Santorum speech. And it was really very interesting. Mitt Romney really got a very quiet, I think I found a quiet place, actually. Mitt Romney really got a very quiet response from the crowd right up until he talked about repealing Obamacare. But it was a fascinating speech because he was very defensive. It was a variation of his standard stump speech, but it was almost as though he came here to say, this is my standard stump speech, but I'm here to defend myself as a conservative. And as an afterthought, he laid out towards the end of this speech, oh, and by the way, this is what I'm going to do when I get to the White House. Okay, now let's go and get him. It was bizarre. I thought it was defensive, and I thought it was ineffective. And I would be very surprised if he won over more than a handful of supporters.
That's remarkable. Let me bring in Ellen Ratner as well. She's on the other line here with the Talk Radio News Service. Ellen, where are you located?
I'm actually in Washington, D.C., just left the White House, where the president made a statement about what he is going to do with this. He said, listen, originally we wanted to take a year to decide on this contraception issue, but we decided to move it along quickly because it was causing so many political issues with people who wanted to make a political...
Don't you think, Ellen, and Victoria as well, but you're both on the line right now, that the Republicans seized on this issue because they wanted to capture the news cycle because there was good economic news? This so much reminds me of when John Kerry was running for president, and every time he got a good news cycle, Tom Ridge would come out and go, oh, my God, a terrorist alert, we're raising the alert, and all of a sudden the news cycle would go back to Bush.
I think that's a really interesting analysis, and I totally agree with you, Tom. By the way, the president was very open. He said that he's a citizen and a Christian, and that he wants people, that religious institutions don't have to provide any contraception, but healthcare companies do.
Okay, great. Ellen, you want me to head back to Victoria for the rest of the news here?
Yeah, you can head
okay.
back to Victoria.
Okay.
I'm a one-person report today, or one-report
okay.
person.
Thanks for the report from the White House, Ellen. Great to hear your voice.
Thank you.
And back to you, Victoria.
Well, yeah, I'm pretty much a CPAC person, but what I would say on that also was it was very interesting that Romney made a reference to Obama, and, you know, we'll stop Obama's... stamping on religious liberty or some such language. But, of course, he made no specific reference to the contraception issue because he'd just been muted. It had just been taken away from him 30 minutes before.
Right, by the president.
Rick Santorum, speaking earlier in the day, had the opportunity to capitalize on it.
So Rick Santorum spoke before the president, basically blew this issue up and put it to bed. Terrible mixed metaphors. And Romney had to speak afterwards.
Yes, and had no opportunity to say anything about it. And I have to say, just walking around, I get the impression, I'm probably being unfair here, I think people are a little furious that the president has taken it away from them. They were really enjoying chewing on this one. It was a really great issue to bash the president with.
Sure.
And he's kind of taken the wind out of their sails.
Well, heaven forbid, people might start talking about the fact that there's good economic news again.
That's not really being talked about very much, and in fact,
Romney
talked a little bit about jobs, but during his speech, he was talking about conservative social issues primarily. who talked about being a job creator, but I didn't hear him mention the unemployment rate once.
That's interesting. You're talking the him being Mitt Romney.
Yes, sorry, Mitt Romney. Yeah, he didn't mention the unemployment rate once. No.
Yeah, he's, well, you know, I remember 4 years ago at CPAC, and they were walking, they had guys walking around in those dolphin outfits, you know, Flipper the, and they were giving away mitts, giant mitts, and calling it, that had Flipper on them and stuff like that. So
yes,
he's never been popular at CPAC. He's never been popular.
No,
you know, one of the,
I wouldn't say yes. Yeah,
you know, I've done CPAC every year for the last 5 years. This is the first year I haven't been there in quite some time. And one of the things that always amazed me, and I never understood until last night when I just caught this in passing in a news report, is that if you walk around, you know, a CPAC, when you walk around CPAC, there's this ocean of young people. You know, it's a, there might be 3,000 or 4,000 or 5,000 people there, and at least half of them are people in their early 20s or late teens. And, you know, all bright and well-scrubbed and fresh and bright-eyed and you know, like little chipmunks ready to go, right? And
I'm looking at
them
right now.
Right, and you just think to yourself, wow, this is the future of America. And I just learned that what they do is there's, like, billionaire donors and fat cats who offer scholarships to young Republican college groups all across the country. And you get into a competition for it, and you get an all-expenses-paid trip to Washington, D.C. to attend CPAC. And so, basically, they're bussing them in.
Really? I see you're telling me news. I wondered how they all afforded to come. I was thinking, all these kids are doing really well.
Yeah, yeah. No, they're bussed in. It's like, you know, half the people there at CPAC are bussed in. It's like a Tea Party rally where they bus them in. It's like the conservatives really know how to stage manage things. And you know, the news media will be showing pictures of CPAC, and you'll see all these fresh young faces. And you know, no, it's, you know, somebody, I don't know who, probably the Koch brothers or whatever, somebody's writing a check for some scholarships for people to get free airplane tickets and bus rides and hotel rooms.
Well, speaking of the Koch brothers, Radio Row, which we're not doing this year, we're in it, but we're not putting it on.
Yep.
Radio Row is sponsored by the Koch brothers.
Oh, interesting. That would have been entertaining. Are the Koch brothers showing up?
Yes.
I missed my chance. I mean, you know, last year I had Dick Cheney sitting next to me, but he wouldn't come talk to me. He just had a Secret Service guy stand behind me with his hand on his gun. It was hysterical. Anyhow, okay, Victoria Jones of the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com. Thank you, Victoria.
Thank you so much.
Great talking with you. We'll be back with more of your thoughts and mine. I got to tell you what's going on with Congressman, the Republican Spencer Baucus. This is the guy in charge of overseeing the banks and things. You're not going to believe this right after this.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Well, let's flash back over to CPAC and see what's going on there. Dr. John Eastman is with us. He's an attorney and chairman of the board for the National Organization for Marriage. That's the website is Nation for Marriage, formarriage.org. He's a former law clerk also to Justice Clarence Thomas. Dr. Eastman, welcome to the program.
Tom, thanks for having me on your show.
Thanks for joining us. I notice, you know, I'm looking at your website and over at nationformarriage.org, protecting marriage, it says, and the faith communities that sustain it. I'm curious, are you married, sir?
Yes.
How will your marriage be harmed if my gay uncle marries the man he's been living with for 42 years?
You know, people raise that question all the time, and I expected more out of you. That's such a straw man argument.
I think it's a genuine and honest question. You're protecting marriage. How are you protecting your marriage by stopping my uncle from getting married?
It's a straw man argument. It will not affect my individual marriage. It will dramatically alter the institution of marriage.
How?
Well, because you will redefine it so that it has nothing to do with procreation and raising of children.
Okay, so you're saying that sterile people shouldn't, if somebody has a hysterectomy or a vasectomy, they should not be allowed to get married?
No, and again, a straw argument. I really expect.
But you just said marriage is about having children.
That's right, and not every
Having children.
Okay. Do you want an answer, or are you going to step on every sentence I put out?
Give me an answer.
All right. So the answer to that is the institution is a cultural one. It is based on cultural norms that are grounded in biology that have as its purpose the fundamental procreation and rearing of children. We foster that institution in a lot of ways, including by setting as a norm that that the institution is for people of opposite sex. That turns out to be true whether that any individual couple is going to seek to procreate or not, because the cultural norm is defined around that. When you alter that cultural norm and say, procreation is not a part of this at all, as Judge Walker issued a finding in his extraordinary opinion in the district court, that procreation has never been a part of marriage, that gender is irrelevant to marriage, you can see how that dramatically transforms the institution. And it ceases to be an institution from which society derives the benefits that it has always derived.
But marriage as an institution has transformed itself dozens of times over the years. I mean, you know,
it has. And in prior instances, we have done it by the people doing it.
Are you going to let me finish that sentence?
All right, go ahead.
Most recently in the 1950s, we did away with miscegenation laws where we said, you know, it's illegal. For most of the history of the United States, we all agreed that the institution of marriage meant one white person, one white man and one white woman, one black man, one black woman, but never the twain shall meet.
And
we changed that.
Well, the
Mormon Church caught up with that in 1978.
That's because we recognize that skin color has nothing to do with the purpose of marriage.
Isn't it time to recognize that
gender?
A gay couple can
no.
adopt and raise, or if the gay couple is female, if it's a lesbian couple, that they can actually produce and raise children?
You know, all of the studies show us that the best optimal situation for the raising of children is by the biological parents.
Actually, the most recent studies I've seen show that the gay parents actually produce more well-adjusted children than straight parents do. And there's a lot of straight parents who, frankly, as a guy who for 5 years ran an institution for abused kids, there's a lot of straight parents out there who shouldn't, you know, who are accidental parents. And did a lot of damage to their kids.
That's right. It's exactly why we need the institution of marriage. It's because of the possibility of accidental parents that you want to channel that natural function into an institution that is best designed to try and produce the optimal outcome for those kids.
Shouldn't marriage be about people loving each other?
Well, no, it could be, but that's a policy judgment that the people of this country have overwhelmingly rejected. They say it's not, you know, I love my brother, I love my sister, I love my parents. I don't get married to them. It's not about the relationship between adults. The principal purpose of that
is... You romantically love your sister?
I didn't say that. You said, shouldn't it be about people loving?
And I'm assuming if people are getting married, they have romantic love.
Only if you don't change the institution to be something that it's not, which you're proposing to do. And so the question in a democracy is, who makes a fundamental, dramatic change in a basic cultural
institution?
What I'm
submitting to you is that if your website... Practicing marriage in the faith communities to sustain it. I have absolute respect for the faith communities out there and totally agree with the Catholic Church, for example, if they want to say that if once you've been married, that's it, you can't get divorced, you can't remarry. I don't know how they let Newt become a Catholic, but, you know, we'll let that pass. If a church wants to say, no, we're not going to sanction this as a marriage, I have no problem with that. But marriage is, the word marriage is in over 10,000 state and national laws that mostly have to do with money. They mostly have to do with economics. They have to do with inheritance. They have to do with tax advantages. I don't understand why you want to deny those to people who, by the time they were 5 or 6 years old, knew that they were attracted to people of the same sex. They didn't suddenly choose one day, oh, I think I'll grow up and be a gay man or a lesbian. And this is who they are. Why would you want to deny that to them?
Tom, you're asking the wrong question. It's not whether I want to deny certain benefits to any particular class of people. It's why society fosters the institution that was developed the way it does. And the reason we foster that institution is because society derives a benefit from it that they don't derive from all sorts of other relationships.
Might you not accept the possibility, Dr. Eastman, that society might derive even more benefit from exaggerating is the wrong word. From pointing out the importance of a loving relationship leading to a long-term commitment?
I'm happy to accept that possibility. The question is, are we going to have that possibility mandated upon us by unelected judges reinterpreting constitutional provisions that clearly do not address this subject?
You're going to force people to get married?
No.
Where's the mandate?
The mandate is that Judge Reinhart is mandated to the people of California that they accept the transformation of the institution of marriage to be something that
it is not. We were forced to accept blacks and whites getting married.
Yeah, because skin color is irrelevant.
It doesn't affect me.
I'm sorry.
It's not going to affect you. You have not been able to demonstrate to me how your marriage is going to be harmed by my uncle getting married.
That's because you didn't listen to me. I said my marriage is not going to be harmed.
Whose marriage is?
The institution will be.
That's an abstraction.
It's a damn important abstraction. It's one of the cornerstones of civil society.
How?
That we channel the procreative function, which, by the way, exists between men and women in a way that it does not exist between men and men and women and women. How can you not understand that basic biological fact?
Did we have civil society at the time of Jesus?
We did.
And okay.
We had marriage at the time of Jesus.
And we did not have homosexual marriage at the time of Jesus. And marriage was between a rapist and the woman that he raped.
You know, thanks very much for your show. You're ridiculous. Goodbye.
No. Yeah, okay, I start quoting the Bible and these guys leave. I guess he doesn't want to have a conversation. Or a debate. So, Prez, listening on XM Sirius in Salt Springs, Florida. Hey, Prez, what's up?
Hey, Tom, it's great to talk to you. That was an interesting conversation there.
Yeah.
Basically, I'm in a Tea Party Central here in Florida in a rural area, and I always have these types of debates with people. But anyway, my call was to talk to you a little about conservatism and liberals, because I always get into this argument with people, and they claim to be conservative, but they really don't know what it is. And I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about that. Because
what the word conservative means? At its core, conservatives believe they believe in original sin, that humans are fallible and broken. I mean, it's also a core tenet of many religions. And although they take it to the political, logical extreme, and therefore, because people are fallible, you can't have the vast majority of people having a large say in how things are done. You have to have an elite basically running the country. And that's why Republicans work so hard to minimize the number of people who can vote. That's why Republicans work so hard to have wealthy elites basically control the national discourse. It's why they try to block out small entrepreneurs and support big corporations, because they believe that large, wealthy, rich elites will provide cultural stability. And the cultural stability is a healthy and good thing for a nation. And I mean, this is conservatives with the best of intentions. That's their core belief. Russell Kirk wrote about it in his book, The Conservative Mind, back in 1953. Prez, thanks for the call.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
William F. Buckley wrote about it. Barry Goldwater wrote about it. These are conservatives. John Dean wrote about it. Probably one of his best books is Conservatives Without a Conscience, which is about where it goes really wrong. Oh, my God, it's Higgins and Guccellini. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Anything Goes Friday. And Dave in Nassau, Washington. Hey, Dave, what's up?
Hey, Tom, this is Bill Olembeckity again. I've been married for 43 years, and my wife and I never had any children.
Okay.
But I did raise a couple of my female cousins, and I've had a lot of people live with me, so I don't know if I should be married or not.
By the logic of our last guest.
Yeah, that.
Yeah. I mean, he's making a global conceptual argument, and the problem is that if you make a global conceptual argument, like, for example, gravity exists, things fall based on gravity, you have to then be able to reduce it down to the local. Gravity exists, therefore, when I drop this piece of paper, it will fall to the table, and which is what happens. Okay, so see, he's taking this global statement that marriage is between a man and a woman, and if you change that, then marriage will change. And so I say to him, well, how will your marriage change? And he says, well, it won't. That's if A equals B in the abstract, A has to equal B in the real world. And it's Dave, I think your marriage is a marvelous marriage, and I think my last guest is full of beans, respectfully speaking. I try not to pick on people when they're not here. Dave, thanks for the call. Your point is really very elegantly made and much appreciated. Peoria, Illinois. It's Adam in Peoria. Hey, Mary. Excuse me. Hey, Adam. I see marriage. I started to say here. Hey, marriage. How you doing, Adam?
Hi, Tom. Real quick point.
Sure.
And it's more along the line of gay rights. When people talk, I mean, is it just me who thinks it's creepy that anyone, like, outside of the relationship is concerned about, I mean, to use a correct word, tickles my fancy? I just think it's weird that they focus so much on these type of things.
I'm not sure I understand exactly what you're saying.
Well, I mean, it's creepy when lawmakers are worried about gay people or even, like, people in the public are worried about that. I mean, that's something that turns me on in the private bedroom, that you shouldn't have any...
Yeah.
Is there any deal with that whatsoever?
Yeah, it's sort of like, you know, there was a guy, you know, one of these anti-gay guys back when this was a hot topic, you know, when Prop 8 was happening in California. We had him on a couple of times. And he would go out of his way to work into the conversation phrases and far more graphic than this about, shall we say, backdoor sex. I'll just leave it at that. He would use very graphic explanations. And it was almost like the guy had Tourette's syndrome or something. You know, it's like, you know, why is he so obsessed with this? Why? And
yeah,
you know, why?
Fetish for
and,
it.
Well, I, you know, I think that I, you know, you have to wonder. It's like, you know, it's the, you know, the men who want to control the lives of women or the and it seems generally to be men, although not always, but, you know, or the men who want to control the lives of other men. It's and women. And people who, you know, move from one to the other, whatever. It's just it confounds me. I think there are some people who hold opinions that, you know, but, you know, rightly or wrongly for reasons that are probably not unhealthy. But people who become activists on these issues, people who devote their lives to these issues, people who make a living on these issues. I'm telling you, either they're riding some kind of gravy train, or there's something funny going on upstairs. I beyond that, I can't come up with it. Adam, thanks for the call. Great to hear from you. Dennis in Middleville, Michigan. Hey, Dennis, how you doing?
Hey, I'm doing good. Tom, how are you?
Just great. Much better.
Good. I just like to point out that the only thing that stays the same with cultural values is that cultural values change.
That's true, and that was my point about miscegenation, and it actually is in the Bible that during the time of Jesus, if a man rapes a virgin and impregnates her, she has to marry him. You know, it's last night we played this clip of Betty Bowers, and I encourage people to Google. You know, Betty Bowers is one of my heroines. Betty Bowers is incredible. And just go into YouTube and Google Betty Bowers traditional marriage and watch this cute little 4-minute video where Betty Bowers explains traditional marriage. And she goes through the whole thing about, you know, okay, Adam and Eve had two sons, and then one of their sons had a child. How'd that happen? Well, Eve, and then Adam, and then Abraham, the father of three religions, he married his sister. And so
right.
Traditional marriage is a man and his sister. But then he got it on with the help. And Betty Bowers says, the help? I don't even talk to my help. And then you know, David, you know, had a bunch of wives and a bunch of concubines. And Solomon outdid him like 5-1. And so that's traditional marriage. And then you know, the Lord said I forget who it was. I think it was Joshua. You know, go into the city and kill all the men and all the women who aren't virgins and take the virgins to yourselves as wives. And so marriage is between a mass murderer and the virgins that he kidnaps. And that's traditional marriage. And then, you know, Betty Bowers goes through this thing about how and if a man rapes a woman, you know, et cetera. It's like our definitions of marriage have changed. Thank God. And they're changing right now to say marriage is about love and it's about some very real legal issues. How do you inherit? The uncle that I mentioned is now dead, and he was my great uncle actually, and he died when I was a teenager, and I knew him well when I was younger, and we all knew that he was gay, but nobody ever mentioned it in the family because this was in the 1950s and you didn't talk about things like that. And he lived with this other man. The other man's name was Rudy. They lived together for over 40, maybe over 50 years. They were old men when they died. And my uncle died first. And I remember the family so upset that there was no way to legally transfer everything to Rudy without having to go through some weird taxation process because they couldn't get married. It's like you've got to. This is just about legal stuff and saying, you know, we honor love. And anyhow, I'm done with my rant. Dennis, thanks a lot for the call. I appreciate it. And I don't know if my personal stories are all that interesting, but we'll be back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
Anything Goes Friday here on the Tom Hartman Program. Oh, have I told you about Spencer Bachus yet? I haven't. I will when I come back. Yep, that's the good, the bad, and the very, very, the lip-thoriciously ugly. Brought to you by EdisonFactor.com, a supplement for the brain. The good! Green jobs. A new report shows that in California, green jobs were twice as resilient during the recession of 2009 than other job industries. Between January 2009 and January 2010, the overall state economy lost about 7% of its jobs, but the green jobs sector only posted a 3% loss. The report would seem to suggest that even in times of economic downturns, the green jobs industry and its products remain in demand and remain competitive. While this report focuses just on California, it does go to show the potential that green jobs have for our economy. In a time when our economy is still weak and just beginning to recover, green jobs seem to be a way to help both our financial situation and our environment. It's about time conservatives got on board. The bad. Rick Santorum. In an interview with CNN's John King, Santorum said that he was worried that should women be allowed to into combat situations in war, they might let their emotions get in the way. He told King, quote, "I do have concerns about women in frontline combat. I think that can be a very compromising situation where people naturally may do things that may not be in the interests of the mission because of other types of emotions that are involved," end quote. Sorry, Rick. When you're on the front lines of war, I don't think emotions are the first thing to be worried about. Santorum has already been wrong about the effects of letting homosexuals serve in the military. Clearly, he's wrong again here. Of course, he's never been in the military, so how would he know? And the very, very ugly Fox News talking head Cal Thomas. No secret that conservatives love to hate Rachel Maddow. She's a brilliant liberal commentator and is excellent at calling it like she sees it. As a result, she's often the butt of conservatives' mockery and jokes for both her views and her sexual orientation. Fox so-called News' Cal Thomas took slander of her too far at CPAC yesterday. After a clip of Maddow reacting to the birth control firestorm was played to the CPAC audience, Thomas said, "I'm glad that you played the Rachel Maddow clip, because I think she is the best argument in favor of her parents using contraception. I would be all for that, and all the rest of the crowd at MSNBC, too, for that matter," end of quote. It's despicable enough that Thomas and his GOP TV cronies attack Maddow for her sexual orientation. But to publicly wish that she never had, should have been born, that is very, very ugly. That's mind-bogglingly ugly. That's like, you can't get uglier than that. Ron in Minot, North Dakota. Hey, Ron, what's up?
Hey, Tom. You know, I thought you were right on in your guest speaker noting that was an abstraction, the institution of marriage as an abstraction, mainly because institutions like, take the Catholic Church or the Pentagon, institutions have powers and authorities, and they can use their powers to do things like excommunicate or drum you out.
Yep.
And then that once that happens to you, your friends or your relatives no longer associate. So there's that fear of, gee, I'm going to lose my family. I'm going to lose my social network. The institution of marriage doesn't have a thing like that. It's not like the church. But what I have noticed, and this is what I think, it's a psychological thing. You know, most of our anger comes from fear. We're afraid we're going to lose something or be hurt. And what I think is, you know, the religion over time has seen the power that they can have by appropriating the codes of sexuality. This is who you have to marry, co-religionist, or you can't have sex until you're married, or you can't have sex with this you know, they appropriate this power over our sexuality, which is a very powerful drive, biological drive in us.
Right.
But the church determines, you know, asserts this power over sexuality, which makes them very powerful. All religions do that, and I'm a religious person. But all religions do that. They assume that. And so what I hear from this guy is...
I don't think all religions do that. I think there's a spectrum. But in any... Pardon my interrupting you.
But I think this man is, what he's really saying, and there's a subtext to what he's saying, is that he doesn't want to see the institution of the church or Christianity or whatever it is he's a believer in. He doesn't want to lose that, so he's frightened of that, and he sees this taking the sexuality, our sexual natures, out from under the power of the church and their control is frightening to him.
Yeah, well, I can't speak to our guest because I don't know him and I don't know what is in his heart. But I would say, broadly speaking, that the people who are most hysterical in arguing that marriage should only be between a man and a woman and that gays should not be allowed to marry are either concerned that their religion will lose its secular power. It will, you know, what's going to be diminished is the ability of religion to participate in the levers of secular power, because marriage is principally a secular institution. You can get married without the church at all. You can get married at the justice of the peace.
Right.
Marriage is you know, the institution of marriage is an abstraction. The act of marriage is actually a legal contract. And if you have it in the church, it's also a contract with the church, but it's not a contract that is enforceable by anything, by the power of law. And so what they're trying to do is say, we want our contract, which is within the church, to be enforceable with the power of law, which is what they have right now in all but seven states. And they want to, you know, so I think that you're right. I think it's about power. And I think it's also about having an other, having some people that they can say, those people are different than us. So that, you know, it's the old Chris Christopherson song, everybody's got to have somebody to look down on. You know, it's like, you know, it's so that they've got somebody they can pick on, which is always, you know, good politics. It's always a great way to raise money and things. And that they can scare other people about, oh, look at those people are going to come and get you. Or you, if not you, your kids. Oh, my God, look, you know, and donate some money to us on the way.
Exactly.
So
and just to add to that, what that doesn't is manipulate our fears.
Yes.
And I think the benefit of good religion is it's about love, not fear. It's about love, which seems to get lost.
Yeah, there you go. Well said. Thank you, John, or Ron, excuse me. Thank you very much for the call. Good to hear from you. Armin in Bradenton, Florida. How you doing, my friend?
Hey, my friend. Hey, I hope you get over that terrible cold. It's interesting that we both had them at the same time.
I'm nearly all better, Armin. Thank you. I hope you are, too.
Okay. Something that I think you'll find super interesting, knowing you and a lot of your brilliant listeners. While I was waiting to get on, I was going through the channels, CNN, Fox. Of course, Fox is, you know, doing their usual war, 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 war. And then I went back to CNN, and they were covering the criminal politician incorporation convention, the CPAC.
Okay.
And
you've renamed it, I see.
Okay. Nitwit Flipper, you're right about Flipper. They call him Flipper, Flipper. I can hear the songs now.
Yep.
Okay, anyway, he was standing at the podium, and this is how subliminal they are and creative. And if you look, go look at the review of it tonight when you get a chance.
Mm.
Behind Romney is two very, very lightly distinct but still camouflage well crosses in the backdrop behind him. Two crosses. You get me here?
Yeah.
And they're just beaming them and beaming them and beaming them. Let me say this first. This is their operandi. This is how the right works since Reagan, and they've successfully perpetrated the biggest transfer of wealth in the history of the globe. First, the right successfully seduces their emotions. That's the people. They know how to get to the red meat, as you call it. Oh, they're brilliant.
Yep.
Then once they get the low information people out there, or the not the brightest among us, then they then proceed to economically exploit their naivety.
Sure.
And they do this so, so well. I mean, they're brilliant the way they do
now,
it.
Now, Armin, you are spot on, and you have totally identified it. It's all about the money.
About
and
the money.
As so often the case, you're right. Joan in Ludington, Michigan. Well, we have a minute to the break. What's up?
I'd like to preface what I have to say with this. I don't remember where I read this, but during the Middle Ages, it was common practice for heterosexual marriage to take place on contiguous pieces of property because this is what it was about. It was arranged marriages consolidate property. But homosexual marriage took place in the church because there was no property involved. It was love.
I have read that the Catholic Church did at one time sanction gay marriage and that it was a fairly limited practice. I can't pretend to be any kind of scholar on Catholic history or theology. And it might have been something that was limited to one country or something like that. But I know, you know, some years back in prepping for one of the gay marriage debates, I came across that little bit of history. Do you know more than that,
told you what I know.
Joan, thanks a lot for the call. I appreciate it. We got another minute. Cool. Let's get another caller in here. Floyd in Butler, Tennessee. We got a minute. Floyd, what's up?
Yes, sir. I believe you're a good man, but I believe you're a little late. You talked a good stuff. I wish it was about 40 years ago, and I truly believed it were. You're just too late to help the people in this country. Education has gone down 48% since 73, and we only had 40 years of middle class in this country in the first place. Yeah. And I believe you're just too late. I believe corporations are going to control the world. There will be no governments.
Floyd, I think we're already halfway there, and I think what's happening is the people are onto it. They're waking up to it. They're fighting back. You've got cities across America who are passing resolutions saying amend the Constitution, say corporations aren't people. There's a groundswell of movement. I'm not going to give up. I'm going to die fighting, Floyd, and I encourage you to do the same.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
There's too much at stake, there's too much history, and there's too much future for us to ever allow despair to be our option. We got to fight.
I see trees of green, red roses too. I see them bloom for me and you, and I think to myself, what a wonderful world.
Yes, and thanks so much to our show director, Louise Hartman, to my executive producer, Sean Taylor, to our associate producer, Jacob Dean, our video director, Jim Javinsky, to our phone screeners, Paul Edney and Julie Lulley, to our writer, researcher, Sam Sachs, to Alva Goldbrook for video production, to our webmasters, Nigel Peacock and Jamie Holly, our business manager, Ron Hartenbaum, to everyone at the companies that syndicate this program, Pacifica Radio, Dial Global, Free Speech TV on Dish Network, DirecTV, and all the cable providers who carry our show, Comcast, Manhattan Neighborhood Networks, and others around the country, to Don Rojas and Dennis Trunov and all those great folks at Free Speech TV and RTTV who work on the big picture, to our newsletter editor, Sue Nethercutt, to the folks in our chat room, hey, to Ellen Ratner and Victoria Jones and everyone at the Talk Radio News Service, to Jay Goodman Tamboli for tech support, to our affiliates, our sponsors, and to you for supporting our program. Thank you. Genuinely, thank you. Robin, in West Gardner, Maine. Gardner? Did I pronounce that right?
Hi. Yes.
Okay. What's up, Robin?
Well, I just want to get into the argument a little bit about gay rights and marriage and all that.
Mm-hmm.
And I used to work for the state of Maine investigating child abuse in the 1980s. And when I was working there, we had a law in the state of Maine that a husband could rape his wife.
You had a law that allowed a husband to rape his wife? Or you didn't have a law that prevented it?
No, we did not have a law that prevented a husband from raping his wife.
Right. Most states didn't have laws like that until the last two or three decades.
Yes, I know. That's why I just want to make that point, because marriage has changed. The laws of marriage have changed.
Yes, you're absolutely right. That's an excellent point, and it shows the evolution of our thinking on marriage. Thank you. Thank you very much, Robin. That's an excellent, excellent point. And it's and you know, it shows how things do change. Lonnie in Kelowna, Iowa. Hey, Lonnie, what's up?
Well, hi, Tom. Thank you for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
I have been listening to this firestorm about coverage for women. And nobody, we've heard from the bishops,
right,
and we've heard from the politicians, but we're not hearing anything from women. We're always the first to be thrown under the train
when it
comes to issues. And that's all I really have to say.
Okay, well, let me just add some fuel to your fire. And in fact, let me see if I could quickly get it here, because it's on the Daily Kos today. I just saw it a minute ago. Here it is right here. The Violence Against Women Act, this is a law that provides federal funding for local communities to provide for shelters for women who are in abusive relationships, to provide for rape counseling for women who have been raped, to help law enforcement agencies track down rapists and prosecute abusive spouses and boyfriends. That piece of legislation has been watered down. It's co-sponsored by Idaho. Here, I'll just read the story. This is straight up, so you can get it. This is Laura Clausen writing over at the Daily Kos. While what Republican war on women, the Violence Against Women Act was reauthorized in 2005 by unanimous consent in the Senate with 415 votes in favor of the House and signed by George W. Bush. It's up for reauthorization again, and they'll tell you they want to reauthorize it, but they want to do it their way. And then they quote from this editorial in the New York Times. The main sticking point seems to be language in the bill to ensure that victims are not denied services because they are gay or transgendered, and a provision that would modestly expand the availability of special visas for undocumented immigrants who are victims of domestic violence, a necessary step to encourage those victims to come forward. And then not only that, Chuck Grassley, the Republican, he wants to cut funding to the bill by $135 million from the 2005 levels, and there's been inflation since then. And the Republican war against women, it's alive and well. It's alive and well. And now it's spreading to the Republican war against gays and transgendered people and female immigrants. So, Lenny, thank you very much for the call. Very, very well said. Carrie in Olympia. Hey, Carrie, what's on your mind?
Hi, Tom. I just want to let you and your listeners know that we're going to have the first national Occupy gathering. We're calling it the Occupy Solidarity Social Forum 2012. It's here in Olympia. It's Saturday and Sunday, February 18th and 19th. We're going to have speakers, workshops, trainings, music. The author, David Corton, will be speaking.
Oh, that's great. He's brilliant.
He's great. And we've got people coming from all over, from Occupy Wall Street, from Oakland, from L.A., from Phoenix, from Oregon, and from all over Washington State.
That's great.
Is Fran
speaking also, Fran Corton?
I'm sorry, what?
Is Fran Corton speaking as well? She's the editor of Yes Magazine. She's
right.
Every bit as smart as her husband.
Right. She actually spoke at something that I was at not too long ago.
Yeah.
But the cost is $25, but we're not going to turn anyone away who can't afford it.
Uh-huh.
And we have a website to go register.
That's great.
And it is. And it is OSSF for Occupy Solidarity Social Forum 2012.org.
Okay, great. Thank you very much for the heads up on that. I have to move along because I have 1 minute left. I want to get one more caller in, but thank you.
Okay,
James,
thank you, Tom.
Thank you very much. James in Franklin, Tennessee. James, that last minute is yours. What's up?
All right. Thank you, Tom. I'm calling about the caller that called in about religion and the gays.
Mm-hmm.
Well, God puts in each of us what to do, and God is about love. He's about bringing us together, not separating us.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's what it is now. They divide and conquer us through religion, through politics, through different things. We're going to have to come together as a people and not be separated over these petty little issues. We're all about love, and that's what's going to make this go round. That is the power of the Occupy movement, is a love and peace that we're trying to do and promote for people. And every other thing that's going to succeed is going to be out of love. And that's what
I'm with you, James.
I thank you for taking my call, Tom.
Thank you, James. I appreciate it. You said it so well. As John wrote, God is love. I mean, there is no more powerful force in the universe than love, in my opinion. Thanks so much for being with us today. We'll see you back here on Monday. And don't forget, Democracy begins when you show up, when you participate. Get out there, get active, tag. You're it. Occupy something. See you on Monday.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, go to tomhartman.com.